following sponsored program are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of this station, its staff, management, or sponsors.
You are tuned to Natural Doc Radio, brought to you by AMT Centers, bringing you health information based on the latest research from respected sources around the world. Learn what you can do to enhance health, strengthen muscles, maximize memory, and energize all the systems of your body. Every day, listen for health information on the latest testing procedures available at AMT Centers, as well as the interpretation and action needed based on your test results. Listen for special events at Advanced Medical Testing Centers. Tune in. Get healthy. Now, here are your hosts for the hour, Dr. Herb Slavin, MD, and Janet Cimarelli, Licensed Nutrition Counselor.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome once again to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli. I will be joined very shortly by Dr. Herb Slavin. And Dr. Slavin, for any of those listeners who may not know, is the founder of the Institute of Advanced Medicine. And for many years, Dr. Slavin and I have been working together to bring the latest information, the statistics that you need to know, the solutions that you need to know about in order to achieve and maintain good health. And so many times people out there think that, oh, they absolutely must have a certain medication to achieve certain numbers on their blood work. Well, indeed, it may be as simple as a change in diet, as simple as supporting a specific nutrient. Dr. Slavin, are you there yet?
Well, good morning, Janet.
Hi. Okay, so a lot of confusion for our listeners, because when I start the show, we have been saying that we're face-to-face, and not so this morning. I'm in Delray Beach at Greenlands, and I will be here until 2 o'clock. And for the next hour, lots of information from you to support good health.
Well, Janet, you know, our listeners may know, we connect to the radio station, at least I do with Skype. Today you're calling in. And after we connected, then Skype decided it wanted to update itself. And that's why I got knocked off. But we're connected now. And, you know, I had a thought that we should pose the question about things we take for granted, or even a better way of saying it, things that we accept without questioning, we accept things at face value and we don't question things. And I'm talking about things related to health. What would you say is tops on that list about things that we do not question, we just accept when it comes to health?
That the food in our grocery stores actually are foods that nourish our bodies, but might very well contain ingredients and substances that detract from wellness and health.
That's true. You know that. You know, if it's sold in the store, it must be safe. Another area, I think, and the reason I'm bringing this up is only because it was in the news again. And that is vaccines. That's routine, and no questions need to be asked. And I bring that up because of a report that came out. Headline, cancer experts endorse the Center for Disease Control's human papilloma virus vaccine guidelines. So the American Cancer Society has endorsed the U.S. government's HPV vaccination recommendations, which include immunizing all preteens against the sexually transmitted human papillomavirus. Well, what's a preteen? A preteen is 11 and 12-year-olds, both boys and girls. and they should be vaccinated against the human papillomavirus. Despite the fact that we hear...
No mention, Dr. Slavin, with about the concept of so supporting your immune system that viruses do not have the capacity to find a happy home in your body and ultimately cause illness.
That's true. And in this headline, they don't even talk about the potential risks of the vaccine. And this is one of the viruses, I think, that we probably have more control over avoiding than so many of the others. So here's what the what they say about how you get human papillomavirus. And they specifically say genital human papillomavirus is spread through contact with touching the skin of someone who has an HPV infection. And human papillomavirus, besides being associated with cervical cancer, is associated with genital warts as well. And they say anyone who is sexually active can get HPV and genital warts. So maybe a better approach would be, you know, to be identified as someone who has the virus, because eventually, if you take proper precautions, you could probably prevent the spread that way as well. Don't we do that with HIV? Don't we try to identify people with it to avoid contact, or even hepatitis? We do that with lots of viruses. Identify who has it so you can take the necessary precautions.
That's true. And the other part of this is the human papillomavirus and its connection to cervical cancer is... an entire discussion. You have various strains of the human papillomavirus. Only, as far as I know, several of them, about three of them, are capable of, in a very long term of untreated infection with that HPV virus, that has the potential to create the cervical cancer, and that is long-term and untreated. And so to think about that, we want to provide this vaccine for 11 and 12-year-olds, boys and girls, seems very dangerous, overreaching of what is possible with vaccines, and completely pushing aside the idea of immune support and antiviral approaches that may have very well potential to knock it out of your body and make it impossible to transmit.
And I think usually you want to get a perspective, because basically if you want to vaccinate all preteens, both boys and girls, that means eventually your goal is to have the whole country vaccinated. So you're talking about vaccinating over 300 million people. And then my question is, what are we trying to prevent? So what I'm looking up here is that the answer to that question, what are we trying to prevent? And they say here that, and this is April 2016, they say an estimated 13,000 women this year in the United States will be diagnosed with cervical cancer. So you have 13,000 women getting cervical cancer, and they want to vaccinate over 300 million people to prevent 13,000 people from getting it, when there are other approaches that could be implemented It's estimated you have about 4,000 deaths from the disease this year. So so you have to save 4,000 lives. And by the way, there's no guarantee the vaccine is going to save any lives as well. Because you know what they say, Janet? They say even if you get the vaccine, you still have to get that yearly Pap test. Because the vaccine only protects you against four strains of human papillomavirus. Clearly, other strains can cause problems as well. And I think what's going to happen is women are going to think, well, I had the vaccine. I can skip my Pap test. I don't have to worry about it.
Well, it's a very strange state of affairs. So it is the CDC who has set specific guidelines with regard to the HPV vaccine. And there is no discussion of what exactly are the ingredients, exactly what is the mechanism with which this HPV vaccine is meant to protect against these specific strains of human papillomavirus that have the potential to cause cervical cancer. One of the things that I did yesterday afternoon, Dr. Slavin, was I did a presentation about healthy body, healthy mind at Harbor Chase. And it was for the caregivers of residents of Harbor Chase. And one of the things that I did talk about was the connection with some of the components typically found in vaccines that may very well contribute to dementia and even minor memory issues. So I asked how many people had had a vaccine in the past year, and out of the audience, it was pretty amazing. Probably 3/4 of those people had had a vaccine at the recommendation of their physician. And those people were completely unaware that there are components in the vaccine, such as mercury, aluminum, certain types of animal organ particles, and that you really don't know what your body's ability to handle those ingredients might be. Some people might have a very good ability to minimize any kind of reaction to the ingredients. Other people might be really damaged immediately and damaged in the long term. So here we're talking about 300 million people potentially exposed to a toxic mix.
And Jenna will discuss a little bit about dementia and infections after the break, but right now it's time for a break. You're listening to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Dr. Herb Slavin with Janice Cimarelli, licensed nutritionist, and we'll be back right after this.
Advanced Medical Testing Centers is proud to sponsor Natural Doc Radio, co-hosted by Herbert Slavin and Janet Cimarelli. They're located at 7200 West Commercial Boulevard, Suite 209 in Lauder Hill. And you can find them on the web at advancedmedicaltesting.com. Advanced Medical Testing Centers is your premier blood draw center, staffed by professionals with over 15 years' experience. Clean, comfortable, and efficient. They guarantee your appointment time and guarantee the lowest prices. They test for cardiovascular disease, cancer, diabetes, and more. They draw for all specialty labs, including Access, Health Diagnostics, Simulex, Innovative, Quest, LabCorp, and others. Call them today to set up an appointment. 754-216-2332. That's 754-216-2332.
Are you in search of the fountain of youth, trying to figure out how to stay young and healthy? There are three main factors that will determine how well you age. The good news is you can take control of all of them and dramatically slow down your aging process. Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutrition counselor, offers remote counseling sessions. She'll work with you to help you manage these three areas to stay young, vibrant, and healthy. She'll help you maintain optimal health that will have you looking and feeling young again. Sessions are offered via telephone, Skype, or email. Sessions are 30 minutes long, and she'll provide you with the in-depth knowledge and information you need to slow the aging process. Schedule your appointment today at janetcimarelli.com. Don't wait. Your clock is ticking.
You're listening to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Dr. Herb Slavin with Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutritionist. And we were talking about vaccines and is there a connection between vaccines and dementia, or more specifically, Alzheimer's disease? And one of the questions I have regarding vaccines is it's a very unnatural way of exposing yourself to those viruses which the vaccines are designed to stimulate the immune system against. And by that I mean most viruses are either, your exposure is either through the respiratory route or gastrointestinal route, not the intramuscular route, because that's how they do it. They give you a shot. So you're bypassing several layers of the immune system, and I think that may be one of the reasons the vaccines aren't as effective as they could be, and maybe also create additional problems that you don't see if you were exposed the way nature has you exposed to them. And I wonder why they don't imitate nature when it comes to vaccines. Why did they assume they just should just give an injection instead of saying if it's a respiratory virus, you inhale a certain amount, or if it's a gastrointestinal virus, you ingest the virus? You have a thought on that?
I think that most likely the thought is on the part of developmental scientists here that they need to use some very high tech approach. They need to pull in a variety of different methods in their minds, different ways of literally shocking the immune system into a response. So I think that they're attempting, number one, to do something patentable, and number two, something very scientifically high tech, so that they can present themselves as forward-thinking scientists.
Well, you said you spoke at a group that deals with memory issues. So I decided, since we're talking about vaccines a little bit, only because the Gardasil or the HPV vaccine came up and how it's being highly promoted, I Googled, what about vaccines and Alzheimer's disease? And if you were to look into that, you would see that the ingredients found in vaccines have been linked to Alzheimer's disease, attention deficit hyperactivity disorders, and autism. So I thought that...
One of the things, Dr. Slavin, that I talk about is the different chemical components that are used in those vaccines surely have a connection to neurological damage.
Yeah. Some of the ingredients, Janet, in the vaccine, you mentioned earlier, aluminum, mercury, other ingredients, have all been linked to side effects that the vaccines can create. Aluminum. Excuse me?
People were shocked yesterday when I told them that there were components like mercury and aluminum in the flu vaccine, because that's something that pretty much any of the physicians recommend to their patients over the age of 60. They're telling them you must get your flu vaccine. Your immune system is not as effective as it was when you were in your 30s. So here, based on your age, you surely should have your flu vaccine. And I think, once again, this is a vulnerable population, and they are unaware of the components that are found in the vaccine. Then when you think about the animal organ particles that are also components in the vaccines, we don't necessarily know the origins of those animals, the way those animals were fed, the way that the organs were harvested, the particles that were utilized in the vaccine, how were they treated before becoming part of the vaccine. That whole profile of vaccine components is so truly scary. And when you do the research, as you're reading from it, Dr. Slavin, that there are very clear connections with the neurological problems of specifically Alzheimer's, dementia, more mild memory loss, and autism, attention deficit, and hyperactivity. So all of these things that kind of in the mainstream media we're told, oh, we don't have the answers for. Well, indeed, we have some of the answers.
Now, just back to aluminum for a second. It's found in the hepatitis vaccines, both A and B, in the diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis, in the pneumococcal vaccine, in the Gardasil vaccine. Think about the accumulation, because now your body isn't even given a chance to remove these vaccines because it's injected right into the muscles. So the body doesn't have a way of getting rid of it, at least if you were to be exposed to these heavy metals like aluminum. Through the digestive tract, your body does have some ability to get rid of them. So here's what you have to think about. Besides the vaccines, you're getting aluminum if you're using aluminum cookware. If you're using cans, how about how much food and beverages come in aluminum cans? You know, when you start thinking about it, what about aluminum foil? I mean, how much aluminum are people exposed to? And nobody, you know, maybe it's time that we, you know, check aluminum levels in people. It makes sense to me. But here's...
It certainly does.
John, here's what the U.S. Congress and the Supreme Court have concluded about vaccines that have been licensed by the government. And they have concluded that they are, quote, unavoidably unsafe. And I thought that was an interesting way of describing them. So if they're unavoidably unsafe, why do we have this push to vaccinate against so many viruses that... probably don't do as much damage. Like we said, if 4,000 people die a year, but you want to vaccinate over 300 million, if you did that, I wonder how many people would actually die from the complications of the vaccine. Because even with the low levels of vaccination rates that we have now, there are deaths associated with it. So what people don't realize, I'm pretty sure, is that the vaccine makers are actually protected against any lawsuits for, you know, resulting from an adverse effect from a vaccine. So if you if the vaccine fails to protect you or your child, or worse, ends up injuring or killing you, you cannot sue the vaccine manufacturer or the doctor who administered the vaccine. As a result of having zero liability for harm arising from the use of their products, vaccine makers have started churning out an ever-growing number of poorly tested vaccines with dubious benefits. I think that's the point. I mean, I think everybody would be happy with vaccines if they were shown to be safe and effective. But neither has been shown. Instead, in order to get people to take vaccines, the government is mandating it, and more states are attempting this, forced vaccinations.
In the state of California, Dr. Slavin, there are no longer allowable exemptions. So even an individual, and this is for children, even a child who has previously had a serious adverse response to a vaccine is not exempted from receiving additional vaccines or the, pardon me, so-called boosters to the vaccines.
Now, we mentioned aluminum earlier. If a child were to get all the vaccines that the CDC schedule recommends, they will receive as much as 4,225 micrograms of aluminum in their first year of life. So to put that in perspective, if you were to use an animal model, that would, if an animal was given an aluminum dose in the range that is nearly comparable to what children receive, they are experiencing severe neurobehavioral outcomes and altered expression of certain genes in the brain. So it's almost a guarantee that you're going to have problems. And how about this one, Janet? The amount of aluminum injected into a newborn baby, in other words, before you take that baby home, they're getting a hepatitis B vaccine. And that equates to an...
absolutely horrible to think about a newborn being vaccinated. What group of people put their heads together and decided that was an intelligent thing to do? Outrageous.
And when you compare that, if you were to compare the dose given to a newborn with an equal amount given to an adult, it would be equivalent of giving 10 doses of the vaccine in one day to an adult. And who would ever think about doing that? So, I don't know who's doing the thinking here. Probably no one. But I think, more attention needs to be paid to this because just common sense suggests that this may not be the best approach. And then we're coming up on a break, but I think here's the bottom line with everything. Do the risks associated with vaccines justify or do the benefits outweigh the risks? I think that should always be taken into account. And we'll address that a little bit. Back. You're listening to Natural Doc Radio. Back to Herb Slavin with Janice Cimarelli, licensed nutritionist, and we'll be back right after.
Are you concerned with the current state of your heart and blood vessels? Advanced Medical Testing Centers, your premier blood draw center, draws for Singulex Labs, which offers specialized blood tests that can help you uncover hidden cardiovascular disease that other tests may miss. Talk to your doctor today about the Singulex test and call Advanced Medical Testing Centers to schedule your blood draw. We guarantee your on-time appointment and guarantee the lowest price. Call us at 754-216-2332. That's 754-216-2332. Or visit us at amtcenters.com. Advanced Medical Testing Centers is a proud sponsor of Natural Doc Radio, which airs on this station each weekday morning at 10 a.m.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Herb Slavin from the Institute of Advanced Medicine. I want to bring you up to date with another advancement in our testing capability, and that's called Integrated Genetic Solutions. And I welcome you to go to our website, drslavin.com, with the drop-down menu under Functional Medicine. To look at Integrated Genetic Solutions. It combines the power of blood testing with the power of knowing your genetics in order to determine the best levels of supplements and hormones to take.
For information on the Institute of Advanced Medicine, go to drslavin.com.
You're listening to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Dr. Herb Slavin with Janice Cimarelli, licensed nutritionist. And I think the question to answer, do the benefits outweigh the risk? And that's true of any treatment. Does it make sense to use a treatment that may have death as a side effect if you're treating something that doesn't have that risk associated with it? I mean, how many of you have listened to commercials on TV about the use of drugs, but they list all the potential side effects, sometimes being death? I think, you know, we need to pay a little bit of attention. The human papilloma vaccines cost about $140 for the three doses, in addition to the office visit charges. What they say about them is that, an article published in the Canadian Medical Association stated that Gardasil, the number needed to vaccinate to prevent 4 or 5 cases of cervical cancer for a typical 12-year-old girl would be 9,080. So that means to prevent 5 cases of cervical cancer, you'd have to vaccinate 9,075 girls.
Dr. Slavin, it just strikes me because of what you were talking about, the cost, $140 for the three HPV vaccines, then the doctor's office visits. We are paying very dearly to expose ourselves to life-threatening treatments. And why, as a population, are we not paying greater attention to these things that have the potential to do us so much harm?
Especially when you're just taking... Well, think about what a vaccine is supposed to do. And this is what I find kind of interesting. So a vaccine is exposing the person to the virus, so that the person can develop antibodies to that virus. Well, you can be exposed to the real virus and develop antibodies to it as well. You know, Janet, one of the things that we've been looking into is just how many viruses people are carrying around in their bodies based on the antibodies they have. And what we're finding is people routinely have antibodies to the herpes virus 1 and 2, cytomegalovirus, Epstein-Barr virus. In other words, they've been exposed to all these things. There are no vaccines for these viruses, but the people have developed antibodies to it. So I just wonder who made the decision that vaccinations are the real solution to the problem. Maybe the solution for the pharmaceutical company.
I think it certainly is a solution to their bottom line and their ability to report to their shareholders. I believe that financial planners will support the statement that says you want very good return on your investment, invest in certain pharmaceutical companies.
You know, and I realize this is a very controversial topic because I'm looking at a website here. That's the Alzheimer's Association website. And you would think that they have the Alzheimer's patients or the pre-Alzheimer's patients' best interest in mind here. But, you know, what they don't tell you here is who's really behind the website. Because basically they're saying that, that aluminum is not an issue. Aspartame, the artificial sweetener is not an issue. Flu shots are not an issue. Mercury is not an issue.
All of the things that I talked about yesterday afternoon, Dr. Slavin.
Well, I'm saying this is what creates the controversy. So, you know, I think the position we have is that it hasn't been proven beyond a reasonable doubt one way or the other. Therefore, I would think it would only make sense then to avoid potential reasons for a problem, even if they haven't been proven. Of course, they're saying it's settled science, it's already been proven, mercury, aluminum, all these things not an issue and nothing to be concerned about. But here's the funny thing on this website, and I always wonder about this. They know so much about what doesn't cause Alzheimer's, yet they don't know what does cause it. So if you don't know what causes it, how could you know what doesn't cause it? To me, that's, until you figure it out what causes Alzheimer's disease, I think you have to keep an open mind on everything.
Intriguing questions.
And that's true about a lot of diseases. You could look at cancer. A lot of times you say, what caused my cancer? And they shrug their shoulders, but they know how to treat it. Well, how can you know how to treat something that you don't know how to prevent? And you can't prevent something until you understand what the cause is. But ultimately, the cause for any illness is a weakened immune system. And then you just have to pay attention to all the things that have the potential to weaken your immune system. And I think that's just common sense, but they want you to dismiss common sense. I'm just looking to see...
It seems, Dr. Slavin, that common sense has taken a vacation when it comes to our medical approaches to a variety of different symptoms. And as you've said many times on this show, the approach of the medical community is a symptomatic approach. There is no indication that they are looking deeper to establish what the cause of the symptom is, what perpetuates the symptom. They simply want to put a chemical cover over the symptom and declare that they have done their jobs.
So if you want to know what causes Alzheimer's disease, it's kind of interesting how they answer that question. It's a, what causes Alzheimer's disease is brain cell death. Well, that solves the problem. It's a neurodegenerative disease, which means there is progressive brain cell death that happens over a course of time. But they don't tell you what causes the brain cell death. They say the plaques are found between the dying cells, and you have where they talk about tangles, and but they don't have any idea what's causing the brain cell death. They just say it's caused by brain cell death. That's like saying that person died because he stopped breathing, or that person died because his heart stopped. I mean, that really doesn't tell you the cause of death.
It's interesting. Yesterday afternoon, one of the subjects that I covered had to do with sleep, and I was talking about lack of adequate sleep over time does have a negative impact on individuals' memories. And I don't have an understanding for a complete explanation of this discussion that I'm bringing up, but it has to do with during sleep, you literally have what they describe as a washing of your brain chemistry, so that there is the removal of some of that debris. Now, if you don't have the correct hydration, if you don't have the correct body chemistry supportive of optimized function of all of the different systems of your body, then you don't have the ability to literally move that metabolic debris out of your brain cells and protect those brain cells from being damaged. One of the things that I did tell people, there's a little bit of information about optimizing vitamin D and using curcumin, a very high quality extract of turmeric. Those two substances, the vitamin D and the curcumin in very high doses, actually have been shown to break apart beta amyloid plaque. So we're not powerless, and we don't necessarily need extremely expensive pharmaceutical approaches. Here's something very basic, very affordable, that has the potential to support and enhance brain chemistry over the long term.
Janet, back in May of this year, so that's really just 2 months ago, there was an article in the New York Times asking the question, could Alzheimer's disease stem from the toxic remnants of the brain's attempt to fight off infection? And we mentioned this when we spoke about it earlier, about Chris Christopherson, who was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease and then several years later was tested for Lyme disease. And when they started treating him for Lyme disease, his memory issues began to improve. So there's a connection between infection, specifically Lyme disease, and dementia. I don't think we should call it Alzheimer's, because that's the kind of dementia when they don't know what's causing it. But if infection is indeed the possibility, does injecting viruses into somebody increase that risk as well?
Well, certainly when you're seeing somebody's immune system that's been overloaded and then you shock it again in a very unnatural way, the potential for a positive outcome is dramatically reduced. One of the other discussions, Dr. Slavin, has to do with hormone replacement therapy. A lot of people don't understand, a lot of women don't understand that Premarin is an acronym for pregnant mare's urine. And if you were to review the physician's desk reference article on Premarin, you would see among the side effects dementia. And very interesting that that's one of the contributing factors to dementia. And when you look in the facilities that have been established to care for so many of the dementia patients who have seriously deteriorated to the point where they're no longer able to be cared for at home, a very high percentage of those women, or a very high percentage of that population, are females. And certainly when we take a look at the hormone replacement therapy recommended for overcoming menopausal symptoms, Premarin's very high on the list, and dementia is one of the side effects.
And there's that music again, Janet, which means it's time for us to take a break. You're listening to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Dr. Herb Slavin with Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutritionist, and we'll be back right after this.
Genobiotic is a way to support your immune system, enhance the function of your digestive tract, and help to maintain regularity. One or two capsules per day provide the basic chemistry needed for healthy gastrointestinal function. Support your good health with the profile of probiotic ingredients in Genobiotic. Find out more about Janabiotic at Janazon.com.
Hi, I'm Janet Cimarelli, and I'm here to tell you about Dr. Herb Slavin, the medical director of the Institute of Advanced Medicine in Lauderhill. The Institute brings the latest natural approaches to health, supported by research. We offer a full range of traditional and holistic treatments. The primary goal of the Institute of Advanced Medicine is to give you, the patient, the information you need to stay healthy and live long. So before you feel sick, before you develop symptoms, come see the team at the Institute of Advanced Medicine. You can call today, 954-748-4991, to learn all about the services offered at the Institute, services from on-demand to chiropractic, from natural skin solutions to nutrition testing and support. 954-748-4991. You can visit drslavin.com to learn more.
Jana Juice provides you the antioxidant protection that is so important to support the health of your cells. Two easy-to-swallow capsules help to minimize the damage from free radicals, energize on cellular level, enhance your immune response, all with two capsules per day. Go to janazon.com to learn more. JANAZON.com.
You're listening to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Dr. Herb Slavin with Janice Cimarelli, licensed nutritionist. And we've been talking about dementia and what causes it. Of course, you have Alzheimer's, which means they don't know what causes it. And then you have other forms of dementia. It could be a B12 deficiency. It could be poor circulation to the brain. But here's what an international group of 31 Alzheimer's researchers has published in an editorial. And what the editorial is saying is, after a decade of failed attempts to treat and prevent the disease, it's time to reassess the evidence that Alzheimer's could be spread by microbes. And they've actually linked several different types of microbes. Microbes are an infectious agent. It could be a virus, it could be a bacteria, it could be a fungus. And what they say here is they have seen studies that have linked the herpes virus to Alzheimer's and two types of bacteria to Alzheimer's disease. And the reason for that is, I guess, that when they do their post-mortem exam, they see these viruses and bacteria in the person. So you have the herpes simplex 1, you have the chlamydia bacteria, and you have another bacteria in the category of spirochetes. Now, what are the bacteria in that category? Lyme disease and syphilis. So, you know, this is not far-fetched. There have been over 100 papers published on the link between herpes simplex virus 1 and Alzheimer's disease alone. So there's been a lot of attention to this area. We see also, for example, stomach ulcers associated with a bacteria, H. pylori, and stomach cancer. So you know that bacteria and viruses can trigger, you know, more serious illnesses. So that's why it's important to keep an open mind on these things. Otherwise, we just keep selling drugs that don't work. People just keep getting worse and worse, and nothing changes. And I think this sort of sums up what we've seen over the years when it comes to Alzheimer's disease. Janet, was there any discussion on drugs and Alzheimer's disease yesterday?
Certainly. I was mentioning the connection with statin class drugs, and it was interesting that there was quite a bit of resistance on the part of my audience that the danger of artificially interfering with liver function and ultimately the body's ability to process fats and the intake of certain fats in the diet. And, you know, way I just referred people to the PDR and the other website that I recommend that people take a look at with regard to statin class drugs is WestonAPrice.org. And they have an article on their website called Myths and Truths about Cholesterol, and it talks about the established side effects. And then I also talk about the SpaceDoc.com, and SpaceDoc is about a retired astronaut and MD who was given a statin drug, and after 2 weeks of using that drug, woke up with transient ischemic amnesia, and he did recover his memory, but he woke up one morning and he did not know who he was, and this was after about 2 weeks of taking a statin drug. So very interesting information out there about the negatives associated, the neurological negatives associated with using statin drugs to lower cholesterol, then that whole discussion about where do you want to be with regard to cholesterol, I said, you know, when your LDL cholesterol is elevated, it isn't that you have bad cholesterol, but rather you are dealing with systemic inflammation. So it's a communication from your body that you need to work on reducing inflammatory response throughout your body, that the inflammation is being detected certainly in your blood vessels, and you need to do something to change your blood chemistry and minimize that inflammatory response. Something in your diet, something in your lifestyle, something you're being exposed to on a regular basis is contributing to that elevated inflammation. And LDL is not bad cholesterol, but rather an extremely efficient flag from your body that you must change something.
Now, and Janet, the flip side of that is there are several drugs on the market recommended to give to people with Alzheimer's disease, but the best they can say about them, it will slow the progression of the disease. And I'm not sure how they even measure that, because the progression of Alzheimer's is different in everybody. So how do they know it slows the progression? But that's what they they're recommending. It slows the progression. It doesn't change the outcome. And none of the drugs address the potential of infections being associated with Alzheimer's. In fact, they're not even recommending doing any tests to see if there is anything in the body like Lyme disease or herpes simplex 1 virus that we mentioned earlier, or that might be connected to chlamydia bacteria. So, you know, they're not even looking. So, but you can do those tests. They are available. It brings me back, and sort of what got me on this topic was, again, that girl that received the Gardasil vaccine, perfectly healthy, and after the vaccine she got very sick, and they blamed all her symptoms on an activation of latent infections in her body, including tick-borne infections. In other words, her immune system was working fine. The introduction of the vaccine overwhelmed the immune system. It could no longer control everything, and the patient got sick. So,
how many seniors might be in that category that they're managing just fine with the latent infections in their bodies, but then they do their annual flu vaccine, and one of the risks of developing Alzheimer's is 5 consecutive years of flu shots.
Now, here's another thing to consider, too. We've all heard of the concept of a leaky gut. Well, the blood-brain barrier, which is supposed to be impermeable to many things, becomes a little more leaky as people get older. And this is why perhaps you see the infections entering the brain when the blood-brain barrier becomes leaky. But not just for infections. It could be other toxins as well. And that's why I think it's important to just consider that in your evaluation of people with signs of dementia.
So using things like vitamin D, like very high quality curcumin extract, using vitamin C to a cellular saturation rate according to a very specific protocol, using silver, using probiotics in a very correct and supportive way, using the superfruits. I talk about the importance of antioxidant status. People who ultimately do succumb to dementia and Alzheimer's in general have been found to have very low antioxidant status. So A, E, C, the trace mineral selenium, alpha-lipoic acid will support those those antioxidants and actually support how they recycle and continue to function in the body. And using the superfruits, acai, goji, noni, pomegranate, raspberry, all of those things, very supportive of antioxidant status. That antioxidant status is important for maintaining protection for healthy cells.
And, Janet, just an observation. Isn't it interesting that the only approaches to treating Alzheimer's disease are drugs? You would think that someone might have considered other approaches.
Dr. Slavin, isn't it interesting that the rates of Alzheimer's disease, the number of diagnoses, is skyrocketing over the past 25 years? Oh, and wasn't it just over 25 years, around 30 years ago, that statin class drugs were introduced into the marketplace? And we literally have every individual over the age of 50 taking statin drugs to lower cholesterol. Isn't it interesting that cholesterol levels used to be acceptable at 300, and now the acceptable level is under 200? Isn't it interesting that very few doctors test vitamin D levels, and that if you are found to have your vitamin D level at, say, 35, your doctor tells you you're good to go. No discussion of optimizing those levels. No discussion of truly evaluating your coenzyme Q10 level, CoQ10, that's going to be so supportive of healthy brain function. So interesting to me that there are very high quality scientists evaluating these things, but coming to a completely different conclusion than the conclusion that I reach.
And Jenna, we've just run out of time. I'd like to thank our listeners. You've been listening to Natural Doc Radio. We're here every Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. I'm Dr. Herb Slavin with Janice Cimarelli, licensed nutritionist. Bye-bye, everybody.
You have been listening to Natural Doc Radio, brought to you by AMT Centers, bringing you health information based on the latest research from respected sources around the world. Learn what you can do to enhance health, strengthen muscles, maximize memory, and energize all the systems of your body. Listen every day for health information on the latest testing procedures available at AMT Centers, as well as the interpretation and action needed based on your test results. Listen for special events at Advanced Medical Testing Centers. Tune in again next time and get healthy. The opinions expressed on the preceding sponsored program were strictly those of its hosts, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of the station, its staff, management, or sponsors.